Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, as we've been hearing, as Dublin finishes its third day of level 3 COVID restrictions, there's a stark warning that we could be heading towards 1,000 new cases a day, and concern expressed that 8 more counties could be heading towards increased limitations on social and economic life. Meanwhile, as we've been hearing in the UK, the worrying news there is from the Chief Scientific Advisor, Patrick Vallance, that 50,000 new COVID cases a day could happen by the middle of next month, leading to 200 deaths a day in November if the infection is not halted. I'm joined now by Gabriel Scally, the visiting professor of public health at the University of Bristol. Gabriel, good evening.
Good evening.
I want to start with the UK. We heard from Enda Brady there reporting before the 5 o'clock news on that stark warning there from Patrick Vallance today. What's your analysis of what he's had to say?
Well, I think it was interesting today. There was a press conference given by the Chief Scientific Officer, Patrick Vallance, and Chris Whitty, the Chief Medical Officer. Quite unusual. They did it without politicians present. They went through the data and they went through the models about where the data was taking us. And it was pretty grim in terms of what lies ahead, because the virus has taken off in the last few weeks, and that's just starting to feed its way through into hospital admissions now. A number of cases are doubling every 7 to 8 days, and they were presenting a fairly reasonable model that if that continued at the current rate, we would be up around 50,000 by mid-October. So it really is setting the scene for Boris Johnson to make some announcements, and the press reports in England would have you believe that there are a series of meetings going on last night and again today to make those decisions as to what action they'll take.
Are we in the middle of a so-called second wave in Ireland, England, and indeed across Europe?
Well, certainly in some parts of Europe, yes. In England and Ireland, no. And I don't think there's any need for a second wave to occur. We've seen a lot of cases there, predominantly in younger people, but it is starting to spread into older people. And England in particular hasn't had a very good find, test, trace, isolate and support system. It's had an absolutely dreadful experience with their system, which they've handed out to management consultants in the private sector, and it's been done extraordinarily badly. And they've got a very short time frame to get that right. They are considering, I think, a whole series of local restrictions, which they have in place at the moment. And the Welsh government has just announced a whole series of local restrictions to try and put a cap on it. But these restrictions will only put a cap on it for a while. And when they lift it again, unless the virus has been really suppressed, it'll go back up again. And they'll not manage that unless they abandon their really flawed approach to their what they call NHS test and trace. It's not provided by the NHS at all. And it's been a real failure. So that's their big weakness.
Can you pinpoint where things have gone wrong in the last few weeks? Or was this entirely predictable and inevitable that we would be in this situation?
I think it was inevitable. Evidence has emerged that in quite a few local authority areas in the north of England, particularly Greater Manchester, by the end of the lockdown, the virus hadn't really been suppressed. It was endemic. It was spreading freely in several of those local authority areas. And that's where the upsurge has taken place. I mean, secondly, there is a sort of pseudo quarantine period for people arriving, but the evidence of people abiding by that is very, very limited indeed. So there weren't any real barriers to stop people coming from anywhere in the world and bringing in the virus. So between not getting it suppressed properly at the end of the lockdown, people bringing it back from all sorts of places, and then exhortations from Boris Johnson and all other ministers that people should go back to work in their offices, even if they were perfectly happy, and even if their employers were perfectly happy for them to work at home. They were exhorting people to go back into city centres to spend money in shops. And, you know, I think it was inevitable that we were going to get to this position.
I know you keep a close eye on what's happening this side of the Irish Sea, and you will know that Dublin is in a 3-week lockdown. There is talk of maybe 8 more counties going it. Well, it's not a lockdown, but we move to level 3 and 8 more counties possibly heading in that direction as well. Looking at the approach here from government in, for example, reimposing closure orders on all restaurants, indoor dining, pubs and bars, that's, I suppose, been the main restriction that's been put in place in Dublin, along with other issues regarding gatherings and so on. What I'm asking you is, are we approaching this potential second wave properly in these region, in these localised lockdowns, or, you know, and specifically in closing pubs, bars, restaurants and all of that? Or do you think, and you've used a phrase, that we should impose or have circuit breakers implemented? What do you mean by that, and how would that work?
Oh, well, yes, well, I haven't been advocating circuit breakers, but they have been advocated in England, and that is just taking a short, sharp period of time where we go back into really strong restrictions. So we all stay at home. We only go out to buy food in shops, that kind of thing. And the notion being that if we did that for 2 weeks, it would have a really big effect on driving things down. And there is something to be said for that. And it is something that with school half terms coming up in England next month, it is something that I think that will be on the option list. Whether it'll work, I think it will. All of these restrictions will have an effect, but they'll not do it unless we do something else. And that's put in place the mechanisms to do the hard graft of finding cases and finding the contacts and helping people isolate and supporting people. One of the good things the government's done in England is they've agreed a £500 payment to people who otherwise would be unpaid if they went into self-isolation. That's a good thing that they've done, but they need to do a lot more to make that system work.
You mentioned there earlier on about younger people, and that has been the experience here up until maybe the last week or so, that it was generally people under the age of 40 that were actually testing positive. And that was probably because people had been, as you said, returning to work and playing sport and so on. But in relation to the messaging, and I'm sure you're aware of the rave that happened here at the weekend, which we spoke about a little bit earlier on. Again, it was young people, and young people have gone through a really tough time, so we're not kind of blanketly blaming them. But do you think that maybe the messaging needs to change, and that the sort of media that young people tend to use more so than the rest of us, that should be used by government and by medical experts to try and get the message out, because they don't consume the media the way adults do, such as watch the 9 o'clock news, listen to programmes like this, or read the Irish Times on a daily basis. Could that be a way of getting through? That's not to suggest that young people don't know the dangers of COVID.
Well, I absolutely think that we've got to reach out to young people, and young people have got to make these kind of decisions themselves. And let's not, you know, target all young people for blame here, because it's only a very small proportion that are causing really big problems or attending raves or anything like that. A huge proportion of young people have been fantastic and have made such sacrifices. But it's so in their interest that we get this right, so that they can continue their education, so they can still see people at school, so that they can be taught in good facilities, socially distant, all that sort of stuff. So all of that education and development that young and socialization that young people need and want can go ahead. But it can only go ahead if young people themselves, as a whole group, act responsibly and decide this sort of activity of you know, illicit drinking or parties or raves are really not on. And I would look to young people themselves to take the lead on this, because they are fantastic and they know what side their bread is buttered. They know that it will be much better for them and for all of us if the virus is suppressed.
As you know, in Dublin, all pubs have been closed, all indoor dining stopped, no travel outside the county. But in the rest of the country today, traditional so-called wet pubs, to use that horrific phrase, are reopening. Is that a good idea in your opinion?
Well, I'm not a great fan of pubs. I'm a great fan of pubs, but I think alcohol and the virus really don't mix well. And our experience from elsewhere is that, for example, some of the cities in England, that they've had real upsurges from just a few pubs not obeying the rules, not socially distancing, and a lot of drink and a lot of people in close proximity. And I think it's up to the publicans and it's up to the community to make sure that, and pubs should be a community resource and they should protect the community. And it's in pubs' interest to make sure that all of the pubs and restaurants are obeying the rules. So, again, it's an issue of communities looking after themselves and their own well-being and making sure that everyone sticks by the rules.
It really does come back to the basics. Wash your hands, social distance, reduce the people that you're meeting and so on. Yet we seem to be doing an awful lot of finger-pointing and engaging in a lot of whataboutery and complaining about mixed messaging. If we go back to the basics and take some more personal responsibility, is that still the key to defeating this disease?
It is, and it's got to be personal responsibility and collective responsibility. And some of the stuff that we moved away from, the 2 metre rule, for example, the latest guidance that's come out from the Centre for Communicable Disease Control in the States is very clear about aerosol transmission. We did think at the beginning it was droplets was the main causation, but now they are very clear aerosol, and that means the air we breathe, not necessarily containing droplets at all. The air we breathe is really important. So that, I think, puts the 2 metre rule back on the table, and certainly a lot of people who are disabled or very frail or have underlying conditions are sticking to the 2 metre rule like a limpet, you know, and it should be brought back in, I think, as the norm. And we need to get our norms right. And you're quite right. That personal, collective and community behaviour, it's all right. It's all the right way to go. That's what we want, because I personally don't believe going down a pathway of legal sanction is the best way of doing. The best way is a collective decision to beat this virus.
It's just been announced, by the way, in the last few minutes that Northern Ireland, they're imposing province-wide restrictions as and from 6 p.m. tomorrow. They already have them, I think, in place in parts of Belfast, but no mixing of households unless for childcare, a bubble, yes, essential maintenance or caring responsibilities. 6 people maximum in outdoor spaces, but only from 2 households. That's coming into place tomorrow. Now, I know you're a great advocate of North-South cooperation, so what's your analysis of that? Because cases have been rising sharply in the north in recent times too.
Well, indeed, the north has got itself into a terrible position where they're actually the worst bit of the UK. And I particularly think the tragic outbreaks in Craigavon Hospital and Daisy Hill Hospital, where I used to work in Newry, are dreadful. And we should look back on the early summer when north and south deaths were down to zero. And case numbers were very, very low. And I and others were saying, right, we've got it this far. We need to get down to zero and keep it at zero. And that meant putting on restrictions on travel. And there was huge opposition from the airline industry and travel industry to that. And I think in retrospect, that we look back on that period in the summer where that was all debated as a missed opportunity to get this virus absolutely under control and going for a zero COVID approach. Look at New Zealand now. New Zealand has recently had problems just with a couple of people who slipped through their quarantine procedures. And they've dealt with an outbreak of 200 cases. They've got it well under control. And they're starting to lift all their restrictions again and go back to normal. And Ireland and Britain could be in that position. But you can't do it with open borders. And you can't do it unless you get the virus suppressed in our communities.
Laura Koonsberger of the BBC is just reporting in the last few seconds that in the UK, the COVID level is moving from 3 up to 4.
Yes, I think that's the way the government will go. I really hope they do more than this. And one of the interesting things in Britain now is that there are a few voices now who are saying, well, this isn't working. And what we've got to do is just let it rip. And we've got to try and protect the elderly and the frail and those with underlying conditions. And my biggest worry is that those small and I think misguided voices take a hold in the political world, because that would be absolutely disastrous. But it's going to be a really rocky 6 months. Actually, the best bit of the press conference this morning was the optimism about a vaccine, that there are 8 vaccines that are promising and several of them in the last stage of their trials, of their major trials. And that's the good news. So let's keep ourselves safe until spring and early summer.
Okay, finally, you did refer there to New Zealand, and it's brought up as a model, and then there's arguments, about how difficult it will be in this situation because we're part of the European Union and we share a border with the UK and so on and so forth, and we're an island nation that needs travel in and out. Anyway, that aside, do you think now at this point that we have a second chance to try and suppress or get as close to COVID zero? Or do you think because the public are just sick, sore and tired of it at this stage, that it is going to be a little more difficult at this stage to get buy-in from the general public?
Oh, I think there's another chance of having a go at this and getting it right this time and getting it down to zero and keeping it there. But it really means you've got to grasp the nettle. And the nettle, I think, that isn't being grasped and there is reluctance to grasp is the issue of keeping your borders open. Ireland and Britain together are one of the few parts of the world that haven't restricted travel in and out to any extent at all. And I think that's a major, major error. It's not just New Zealand. If you look at Taiwan, a very populated island, fantastic record of keeping the island virus-free and their economy going. And it can be done. And it requires North-South cooperation, and that can be done if there's a will to make. If this, as I've said right from the beginning, if this was an outbreak in cattle or pigs, we'd have such cooperation between North and South to make sure that the agricultural sector was saved. Absolutely. And we need that North-South cooperation in spades to try and keep our population safe.
Yeah, and there was evidence of that back in 2001 with foot and mouth on these islands.
There was indeed.
Yeah. Okay, Professor Gabriel Scally, lovely to chat to you again. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme.